Today is Thursday, April 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The United States says it wants to look into Chinese labs to uncover the origin of COVID-19.
We don't know if they are operating at a level of security to prevent this from happening again.
Plus, what does the research show thus far on the development of a coronavirus vaccine?
The data shows that remdesivir has a clear-cut, significant positive effect.
And Lebanese protesters and soldiers clashed in Tripoli. Those stories and more next. The world is approaching 3.25 million confirmed cases of COVID-19. That, according to a Johns Hopkins University tally, and the coronavirus has killed more than 227,000 people worldwide. U.S. President Donald Trump says he is not happy with China and has asked U.S. intelligence agencies to investigate the origins of COVID-19 in Wuhan, China. The Office of the Director of U.S. National Intelligence says the best evidence shows that the COVID-19 coronavirus was not man-made or genetically modified. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the world has every right to investigate, and that the U.S. is also worried about other labs throughout China that are researching contagious pathogens with an unknown level of security. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain starts us off.
Asked about the investigation he has commissioned into China and the World Health Organization, President Donald Trump says he is not happy with Beijing's response when the coronavirus first broke out in Wuhan. This is all transpiring just as President Trump faces criticism by opponents of his own handling of the coronavirus crisis heading into a re-election campaign.
Could have stopped that at the source. They didn't have to let airplanes fly out and loads of people come out.
For their part, Chinese leaders say they want to be transparent and to partner with the United States to fight the deadly virus. But Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the Chinese Communist Party is still withholding information and denying access to its labs.
Look, we still haven't gained access. The world hasn't gained access to the WIV, the Virology Institute there. We don't know precisely where this virus originated from. There are multiple labs that are continuing to conduct work, we think, on contagious pathogens inside of China today, and we don't know if they are operating at a level of security to prevent this from happening again.
Chinese state media has blasted countries for asking for an investigation into how the virus started and spread around the world, saying they are using the virus to unfairly stigmatize China.
Who in the world wouldn't want an investigation of how this happened to the world?
Asked about demands from some that China pay a price for the tens of thousands of coronavirus deaths and the global economic impact, Pompeo said there will be ample time to figure that out later. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The diplomatic dispute is also intensifying between Australia and China over the coronavirus. Phil Mercer has that part of the story.
China has rejected criticism from other governments about how it handled the outbreak of COVID-19. The highly contagious and deadly new coronavirus is thought to have originated at an animal market in Wuhan, a large city in China's Hubei province. Australia is pushing for an international investigation into the origins of the disease and how and why it became a global pandemic. While likely to have support from US President Donald Trump, France and Britain have said now is the time to fight the virus, not to look for who to blame. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison, though, says the world deserves answers on the deadly COVID-19 outbreak.
Australia will continue to, of course, pursue what is a very reasonable and sensible course of action. It has shut down the global economy. It would seem entirely reasonable and sensible that the world would want to have an independent assessment of how this all occurred so we can learn the lessons and prevent it from happening again.
China sees the inquiry as a political witch hunt orchestrated by the US and designed to humiliate Beijing. Its ambassador to Canberra has hinted at retaliation and a boycott of Australian products and universities, described by a senior Australian government minister as threats of economic coercion. However, Long Zhu, China's consul general in the state of Victoria, says Beijing has acted in good faith over the COVID-19 pandemic.
China has attached great importance to international health cooperation. The Chinese government has released information related to the COVID-19 in an open, transparent and responsible manner.
Some experts believe Australia's relationship with China, already strained with allegations of political meddling and cyber espionage, is now at its lowest point since diplomatic ties were established in 1972. Australia has much to lose. China is its biggest trading partner, and its demand for natural resources has helped to underpin its recent prosperity. Before Australia closed its borders because of the COVID-19 outbreak, Chinese travellers and students were also important to the success of its tourism and higher education sectors. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Scientists have announced what they think is the first effective treatment against the coronavirus, an experimental drug that can speed the recovery of COVID-19 patients. The top U.S. infectious disease official, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
The data shows that remdesivir has a clear-cut, significant, positive effect in diminishing the time to recovery.
International Edition's Lori London spoke with Dr. Arthur Kaplan, professor of bioethics at New York University Langone Medical Center. He says there's no magic bullet or timeline for a vaccine, rather a series of hurdles, including successes, effectiveness, duration, distribution, cost, and safety.
Well, I think it would help us a great deal to have a vaccine. That's probably the most important breakthrough we could get. Are we going to have it this year? I'd be willing to bet a lot of money, no. And the reason I say that is there are so many steps that have to be taken before you could get really hundreds of millions of doses of vaccine out to either Americans or billions to the world. It is just silly to talk about doing it by the end of this year. People are getting the impression from the administration, even from some of our top scientists like Dr. Fauci, that 12 months, 18 months is realistic to have a vaccine that would help us vaccinate our way out of this plague. Look, here's some steps. We've tried to find a vaccine for AIDS for about 30 years, and we haven't. So one problem is just because everybody's working hard and would really like to do it and could even make some money from it, it doesn't mean we'll get it. So the first obstacle is just figuring out, are we going to do this more like polio? Are we going to be lucky and do it like we did with hepatitis A and measles? Or are we going to be confounded? Second, even if you get a breakthrough, then you have to figure out how effective is the vaccine? People think, oh, vaccine, it must be 100%. No vaccine is 100%. The best numbers I've ever seen in a vaccine, probably measles vaccination, is about 95%. So the reason I'm pointing this all out is when somebody says, well, we'll have a vaccine, I'm thinking, what if it's only 50% effective? Are we going to make it and distribute it and just say, well, that's better than nothing? Or what if it requires two shots or three shots? Could we really get that done effectively around the world? If you don't do it worldwide, you're just begging the virus to come back.
What if another country, like, say, Germany, comes up with a vaccine for COVID-19? What would that mean for the rest of the world?
Vaccine manufacturing has been falling down for decades, so we only have five big companies, really, that make most of them. The question really is, if some country came up with a vaccine, would they say, okay, well, we'll give it to the place that needs it the most? Or would they say, nah, we don't care. We're going to keep it here in Germany and vaccinate everybody in Germany. So again, another problem with vaccines, I'm not sure they're going to go where they're needed the most.
Is there no way at this point to really predict whether we will have a vaccine, it will be able to be distributed, we will all be able to get it in any sort of time frame at this point?
One other factor in terms of when could we expect this, and that's cost. Tetanus vaccine is pretty cheap. I think it costs 10 cents and it's around the whole world and there are a few places that don't have enough of it, but it's pretty good. It's out there. HPV vaccine for cervical cancer, $300. Shingles vaccine, a very new one using new technology, given to older people, probably $500.
Wow.
If this vaccine turns out to be $500 per go, I think you can see what the other problem is. The rich might get it. The connected might get it. The rich countries might get it. But there's going to be an awful lot of people who aren't going to be able to afford a $500 vaccine.
Dr. Arthur Kaplan is a professor of bioethics at New York University Langone Medical Center. He was speaking to our own Lori London. The director of the African Centers for Disease Control said African countries need to conduct 10 million COVID-19 tests in the next few months. But so far, they've only conducted 600,000. Dr. John Nkengasong said Africa has relied on test kits from Germany and China and is now looking for other suppliers. VOA's Jason Patinkin has more on Africa's COVID-19 testing shortage and what can be done about it.
Nkengasong spoke at a virtual panel organized by the Washington-based policy think tank, the Atlantic Council. The veteran virologist said that to ramp up testing, the African CDC and the African Union have launched a partnership to accelerate COVID-19 testing on the continent. He said their goal is to roll out 1 million more tests in Africa in the next 5 weeks and 10 million tests in the next 3 to 4 months. But that means getting millions more COVID-19 tests.
We've ordered 1 million tests from a company in Germany, which has been supplying us the tests since the beginning of this outbreak. And it's the same company that has been producing tests for WHO as well. So we have a common supplier there.
But with the whole world in need of tests, that company can't keep up with demand, Nkengasong said.
The second source of tests that the continent has received massive support is through the Jack Ma Foundation donation, which in the last 4 weeks or so, they were able to distribute to the continent 1 million tests. And today, another shipment of 500,000 tests will be coming from the Jack Ma Foundation in a bundle that will include extraction reagents, the test itself, and the swabs. So I think that is also going to be a huge relief for the continent.
Nkengasong said Africa's CDC is also looking for commercial manufacturers as a third source of test kits. He mentioned U.S. companies Cepheid, Abbott, and Roche, who already work with Africa's CDC to test for tuberculosis, HIV, and malaria.
The Africa CDC is in discussions with the leadership of Cepheid to understand how we can provide us direct support, because the point of care test that has been developed by that company would be a game changer if large amounts were to be available for us to scale up the testing, especially in the remote areas, the more vulnerable areas like the slum cities and around the capital cities.
But Nkengasong warns that having enough test kits is just one step. He said tests must be targeted, noting that some African countries are testing hundreds of people, but only finding a handful of infections despite the virus spreading in the community.
You really have to find the cases as much as possible, isolate them, do the contact tracing, the basic things, so that we tilt the balance against the 3 million deaths that are projected on the continent.
For Africa, the race to test fast and test smart is on. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
And coming up later in the program,
it is one of the iconic paintings done by Dutch master Johannes Vermeer, the girl with a pearl earring. As VOA's David Byrd reports, after 2 years of research, investigators have answered some key questions about the artwork known as the Dutch Mona Lisa.
This is VOA News.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Businesses around the world are reporting record losses. Unemployment numbers continue to rise as governments release stimulus packages to ease the financial blow. The world's stock markets, however, have seen some increases in recent days. Now, to better understand the economic situation and what may explain the market's rise, I spoke with David Wilcox, a senior non-resident fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
You know, people who claim to be able to interpret the markets with certainty must have a different set of powers than I do. I think it's a very confusing mixed picture. The fundamentals of the health situation remain very serious. The virus is not yet controlled in the United States, and there's no assurance that it won't come back as some of the as states progressively reopen. We're going to be in a situation here with regard to how open the economy is, in a sort of situation of tiptoeing in and then running back, tiptoeing in and running back. And the running back will occur as the disease resurges. And then once it's under control, we'll tiptoe back in. I think what the markets are probably attempting to do is to balance all of that uncertainty on the health side with a massive amount of policy stimulus that's been provided to try to cushion the blow for those who are really seriously impacted by this situation.
If we take a look at the macro level of economics, the economy continues to move forward, slowly, but continues to move forward. Granted that each individual business is different and each sector is different, how good are things or how bad are things?
This is a eight-cylinder engine at the moment is not firing on several of its cylinders. It's a confusing picture where some companies are doing fine. Many companies that rely for their business model on human-to-human contact are nowhere to be found, and for good reason, for public health imperatives. Their workers, for their safety, need to stay at home. There's no percentage in bringing a company back when the conditions simply aren't safe. So, Steve, the picture ranges all the way from companies that are only mildly inconvenienced, where the workers may be needing to work remotely, to companies that have flatlined. Just to take the simplest example, thousands of restaurants across the country, of course, remain shuttered, and there's not any prospect that customers are going to be eager to come back and populate those restaurants in anywhere near the way that they did pre-coronavirus.
That was Peterson Institute for International Economics senior non-resident fellow David Wilcox. We'll have more of that conversation on Friday's program. Lebanese protesters and soldiers clashed in the city of Tripoli Wednesday, marking a third night of unrest in a country that has been in the throes of a worsening economic crisis compounded by the coronavirus shutdown. Reuters' Gloria So has the details.
Shots were fired and streets were lit ablaze in the Lebanese city of Tripoli on Wednesday. It marked a third night of unrest as protests fueled by worsening economic conditions rage across the country. Protesters threw Molotov cocktails at soldiers who answered with rubber bullets. Lebanon is one of the world's most heavily indebted states. The country's currency has collapsed, losing more than half its value since October. Inflation and unemployment have also soared, and some Lebanese say the economic crisis has been compounded by political mismanagement.
The economic collapse of the Lebanese pound would lead to this. People have lost their purchasing power and the state has no plan to do anything. Banks are closed, not giving money to people. I think this government should resign and leave.
Many protesters have taken out their anger on banks, burning storefronts and smashing ATMs, angry that they've been frozen out of their bank accounts. The crisis is widely considered to be the biggest risk since Lebanon's 15-year civil war. And now, the government-mandated coronavirus shutdown has only aggravated the worries of many.
People are dying anyway. I would rather die from coronavirus than from those members of parliament ruling me and killing me slowly.
Only a handful of Lebanon's banks have remained open during the shutdown. The Banking Association has now declared all banks in Tripoli to be shut until security is restored.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria So. Police in Washington say that they have arrested a suspect after someone opened fire on the Cuban embassy with an assault rifle. Authorities say the gunfire erupted around 2 a.m. Thursday and hundreds of rounds were fired. Police say officers found the suspect with an assault rifle and took the person into custody. They did not comment about a possible motive. No one was hurt in the incident, although the embassy suffered minor damage. It is one of the iconic paintings done by Dutch master Johannes Vermeer, The Girl with the Pearl Earring. As VOA's David Byrd reports, after 2 years of research, investigators have answered some key questions about the artwork known as the Dutch Mona Lisa.
In fine art circles, she is known simply as The Girl. A young woman with delicate features stares out at us as if we had interrupted her. She wears a yellow jacket and a blue and yellow headscarf. Her skin is smooth and delicate. Her eyes twinkle. Her lips are slightly parted, and there's a pearl earring in her left ear. Now, after a 2-year project at the Mauritshuis Museum in The Hague, we know a little more about her and her creator, artist Johannes Vermeer. The last time the painting underwent such research was in 1994, but modern technology has given curators and art historians the ability to dig deeper into Vermeer's work without touching the painting. Martine Husselink is the director of the museum. In a video released with the research results on the museum's website, she said that researchers had hoped to answer several questions. She said because the painting appeals to the imagination, there were questions we still wanted to answer, like how did Vermeer create this wonderful painting? What lies beneath the visible composition? And what kind of paint did he use? And where did he get it from? Beginning in 2018, the painting was placed in a special glass room so visitors could watch as researchers worked. Their instruments included high-resolution 3D digital microscopes that are capable of zooming into minute areas of the painting. It also included detailed analysis of the pigments Vermeer used and how thickly he applied them. Conservator and project leader Abby Vandeveer said in her video about the study that the white lead of the girl's earring comes from the Peak District of northern England. The red is cochineal, made from insects found in Mexico and South America. And the most precious of the pigments, ultramarine blue, came from Afghanistan.
It's surprising how much high-quality ultramarine Vermeer used in the girl's headscarf. This blue pigment was more valuable than gold in the 17th century. It was made from the semi-precious stone lapis lazuli, that came from what is now Afghanistan.
Vandeveer says Vermeer was very systematic in his technique, even allowing each layer of paint to dry before applying another one.
He started with the background, then he painted the girl's face, then her yellow jacket, white collar, headscarf, then the final details like her pearl earring.
Researchers also learned that the artist did not paint the girl in front of a drab, dark background. Their analysis revealed diagonal lines which turned out to be the folds of a dark green curtain. And they saw eyelashes and small hairs painted above her eyes, the answer to another academic debate. One question the technology could not answer, who was she? Mauritshuis director Martina Husselink says even technology was no help in answering that question.
Meisje geeft het geheim van haar identiteit helaas niet prijs.
She said the girl hasn't revealed the secret of her identity yet, but we got to know her a little better through a unique collaboration of an international team of researchers using state-of-the-art techniques. The findings of the study are published on the museum's website. The public will have to wait to see the painting in real life. The Mauritshuis and all Dutch museums are currently closed as part of measures to control the spread of the coronavirus. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, your tablet, or desktop computer to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a thoughtful Thursday.